case today, United States versus Elend.
Judge, there were two issues presented in our petition for review brief. First deals with the legality of the warrantless arrest of the defendant, William Island, on February 12, 2002. Second issue deals with the legality of the sentence that was imposed by the district court. With regard to the first issue, William Island, the appellant in this case, was his arrest was the culmination of events that had begun earlier that day when officers of the Gary Response Investigative Team arrested one Robert Leone for drug trafficking. Leone had been the subject of an ongoing investigation for some time, which included surveillance into his narcotics trafficking activity and even some controlled buys of narcotics. After his arrest on February 12, he was interviewed by the authorities, and Leone agreed to cooperate and set up a buy with one of his sources of supply. Subsequent to his arrest, the police had found a slip of paper in his possession that had a phone number and the name Bill printed on it. Later on that day, Leone placed a phone call to that number, and that call and a return call were monitored by the authorities. And neither of these calls were narcotics directly or indirectly discussed in terms of type, price, or quantity. It should be noted at this point that Leone had said Bill was an African-American male, approximately 6'6" tall, and weighing 330 pounds, and he drove either a blue Ford or a pickup truck. Later that evening, at about 7:20 p.m., as the defendant, the appellant Island, drove his automobile into McDonald's restaurant in East Chicago, Indiana, he was arrested without a warrant and was removed from his vehicle. A search of his vehicle revealed cocaine, which was seized, and later on a warrant was obtained for a search of his apartment where more cocaine was found. It's our contention that no probable cause existed at the time of his arrest to justify that arrest without a warrant. At the time of the defendant's arrest, the police were armed only with the information provided them by Leone, who by definition was an informant, and who prior to that day was known only to the police by virtue of his own drug trafficking activities. He had never, prior to that day, provided any information to the police via an informant status or any other way.
Yeah, but everything changed that day because he basically fully confessed. He talked about who his supplier was. He talked about how regularly they conducted transactions. And so when they have a phone conversation, it's true there's no discussion of amount or price, but there's certainly references in that conversation, and certainly the defendant understood them and then actually showed up at the time and place. So doesn't that, I understand it was an informant for that day who had no prior history, but doesn't that corroborate the informant and cause you a problem?
I think not, Judge. And the reason I think not is because the conversation that the police were listening to and that they monitored was neutral as to any discussion of narcotics. I recognize that the information from him could have established probable cause if the warrant, if the informant was sufficiently reliable, but he has no track record for the police to rely on at that point. The issue, I think, in this case turns on whether or not there was any attempt at independent corroboration of that information by the police. Since they had no record for him to consider, he had never provided information before, and in fact, Judge, he was in custody at that point for his own drug trafficking activities. And I think his reliability or the information that he provided at that point has to be examined in light of that.
Are you arguing that Mr. Leone was unknown to the officers?
Well, only as to his own drug trafficking activities. activities. He had never provided information before. He had no status as an informant prior to that day.
Well, but that you had conducted several controlled buys from him previously.
Yes, Your Honor, but I was speaking in terms of his reputation for credibility and veracity that they could have relied on to bolster their probable cause. Furthermore, as of February 12, 2002, the appellant was unknown to the police. He had never had any contact with them at any time, and they had no record, criminal record at all.
Well, and then even the conversation they had, Bill said he needed more time. He had to cook some up. That's pretty damning from, you know, when prior days have been all these deals, and then later on, in response, Bill says he went to the wrong place, and your client, Leon says, I'm starving out here, you know, what's going on? And so, you know, by implication, in terms of looking at the district court and the court making credibility findings, and also the police officers making those findings for probable cause, that's not helpful to you.
Interestingly, Judge, that comment about that he needed time to cook something up was not recorded. That was the recollection of one of the police officers at the motion to suppress hearing. The other part of the conversation, which did not refer in any way to narcotics in any type or fashion, were recorded. It seems to me that the police, even armed with what they heard or allegedly heard in this phone conversation, and the fact that they had no prior contact with Leon, they should have attempted to, in some fashion, corroborate the information that he had provided them.
Well, I mean, they expected Leon to have a drug supplier. The Leon's statements about his source were consistent with those expectations. Leon provided details about the bill, which
were
correct.
About his size, yes.
Yeah. A first-hand account of their relationship. There's quite a bit here, actually, when you get right down to it, isn't it?
Well, Judge, I don't believe that there was any attempt to verify that information, and by what I would suggest that they could have done was, number one, attempt to verify to whom the phone number that Leon provided them was assigned, what automobiles were addressed or assigned to that particular address. I don't find it particularly significant that he predicted that he would be at the McDonald's when Leon is the one that set up the meeting and initiated the call that required them to go there. I honestly feel that in this case, the government jumped the gun. They could have waited well into when this transaction occurred before making an arrest, before jumping in and doing that.
Of course, all of this took several hours. I mean, wasn't it 5 minutes?
Yes, Judge, that's correct. I still suggest to the court that the more prudent way to proceed in this would have been to wait until the transaction occurred at the McDonald's. In any event, the second issue, judges, that we deal with in this case was the legality of the defendant's sentence under the guidelines with regard to the sentence for possession with intent to distribute crack. It's our contention that there was insufficient evidence presented to the district court to permit the defendant to be sentenced under the harsher penalty for crack cocaine rather than under the former cocaine. We recognize that it's a preponderance standard that is placed upon the government in this case, and that could have been met in a number of ways at the trial or the sentencing hearing. But there was no effort to present evidence that the substance possessed by the appellant on 212-02 was, in fact, crack cocaine. They could have had the police or another witness identify the substance in question, but they didn't. As a matter of fact, at the sentencing hearing, when defense counsel renewed his objection to the sentence based upon the government's failure to sustain its burden, the government's response was that their chemist identified the substance as cocaine-based and has satisfied their burden since cocaine-based is synonymous with crack.
Didn't the participants in this transaction refer to it as crack?
He had said earlier on that he had purchased some weeks prior crack the court is aware that all, that since all crack may be cocaine base, not all cocaine base is crack, and that based upon that, we would ask the court to remand that issue for sentencing.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. Baker?
May it please the court, I'm Andrew Baker, Assistant United States Attorney on behalf of the government. I think the record here shows abundant probable cause by the officers. It's important to note that Leone was not an anonymous informant. He was in police custody trying to save himself. It isn't like a telephone, an anonymous telephone call police get saying that something's going to happen or that somebody's got a gun that can be given for any one of many motives. This informant was trying to save himself, reduce his sentence and what he faced by producing drugs for the officers. He was in their custody. They weren't going to be very happy if they came up dry or he let them down a wild goose chase. He had extreme motivation to provide them with honest information. They knew who he was, and he was providing that information under those circumstances. They were going to be very unhappy with him if he didn't produce those drugs. It's also important to note that the car wasn't just a blue Ford. It was a blue Ford Crown Vic that the man bragged about looking, or they talked about looking like a police car. Plus the fact that Leone identified the car as being Bill's as he pulled in from his vantage point across the street. Moreover, the number that was called to set this all up, the officer testified, was the number, he watched it on the screen, was the number that he had, that Leone had for Bill in his pocket, which he said was his drug source. And although there was no mention of crack cocaine, the officer testified, I believe at page 49 in a transcript, that the officer heard Leone say he needed Z, and he testified that needed Z, and that he said the drug dealers use code words. At trial the callback, he asked for more time to cook it up. Now, if somebody's cooking up something to bring to you, you don't go to McDonald's to get it. That was cooked up crack cocaine to be delivered to Leone. That's what Bill was doing. Under those circumstances, with a big black man in a blue Ford Crown Vic coming in response to calls setting up drug deals, as outlined by that informant, has got to provide probable cause for the officers to make that arrest.
Well, let's go to the crack versus cocaine, because the evidence was really thin that this was crack cocaine, and given the severe sentencing penalties when it's crack versus cocaine. It's very thin. There was no chemist that testified, or as in a typical case, you'd have a stipulation that this was crack.
It was cocaine base, which is one of the requirements for crack. You said that chemically it has to be cocaine base. That's unquestioned. Mm-hmm. But the chemist testified to that. Now, for the purposes of sentencing, the basic...
He testified that it could be...
called crack.
Could be. He described as crack.
Right. But he's on the scientific... He called it crack cocaine because that's the scientific results of the analysis, is that it's cocaine based rather than cocaine hydrochloride, some other form of cocaine. But in addition to that, the court had before its sentencing the fact that Leone testified at trial he bought 2 ounces of crack cocaine 2 weeks before the defendant's arrest. And further, they had the information suppression hearing where Leone told the officers testified that Leone told them that he always got 2 ounces of crack cocaine from the defendant for $1,800, and that's why they didn't have to go through the machinations of what he ordered, because he was always getting the same thing and he knew what the amount would be.
Well, I understand all the circumstantial evidence that supports the conclusion that it was crack.
Secondly, he said he had to cook it up. on the phone, which is the process by which you get crack as described by the government's expert. Secondly, the crack is made by cooking up with baking soda, and in the defendant's kitchen, there were two boxes of baking soda and a Pyrex beaker with white residue. I submit that that's more than...
Baking powder is not used to cut normal cocaine?
No. No, ma'am, I don't believe there's ever been any indication that that's the adulterant.
I mean the powder form.
For cocaine hydrochloride. It's used to cook crack, and the defendant, as I said, the telephone call bill says he has to cook it up. They found the baking soda, they found a Pyrex beaker, which is not ordinarily a household item, but more of a chemistry item, a Pyrex beaker with white residue found in the defendant's kitchen. And under all these circumstances, I think the evidence is more than sufficient to support the finding beyond a by preponderance of the evidence that the material that Bill had in his possession with intent to distribute was crack cocaine. Unless the court has any further questions.
Just along that line, what was discovered in the kitchen of Elam's house? According to your brief, it was a photograph which identified 29.5 grams of crack cocaine, is that right?
That it, yeah. No, there's additional, there's one quantity of crack cocaine, one quantity of the drugs, there was one quantity of drugs found on the defendant or in his car at the time of the arrest. And it was from, that was the 61, if I understand it right, 61, and the additional crack was found in the kitchen. Those drugs were analyzed, that's what the chemist testified about, and he said scientifically it was crack, it was cocaine base, which is the scientific results in the analysis could be referred to as crack, so they do have some cocaine base out of Columbia or some other place. Admitted that all cocaine base is not crack, but I think this other evidence about having to cook it up, having the baking soda and the white, the beaker with the white residue, the Leon's statements of what he was buying from the defendant, always bought from the defendant for the same amount with crack cocaine, was under these circumstances sufficient to support the determination.
What do you describe cocaine base that is not crack? What is there a street name?
Well, for example, the famous case, at one time cocaine base was obtained with an ether distillation process, very flammable, and resulted in fires that I think have been the subject of news release. Baking soda is much more stable, though that process is not as risky, produces chemically the same result, cocaine base. So that liquid form obtained with an ether processing is a cocaine base that is not crack cocaine.
Liquid.
And I don't believe that is a liquid. They're the only two that I'm aware of, but that's just me. That isn't more than that isn't in the record, or that isn't in the record.
Thank you.
That's one way you can get it. If there has no further questions for the rest, it doesn't do for me.
Thank you.
Mr. Beal?
Very briefly, when murdered and enhanced a man's sentence 100 times, based upon crack over powder cocaine, the guidelines are specific in requiring that that be proved to be in fact crack. In this case, I don't believe that the government sustained their burden by a preponderance. There was no testimony from the agent or from the chemist saying that it was crack cocaine, nor was there any evidence adduced from any other witness which would verify it was crack.
You do agree it could be by circumstantial evidence, though?
Well, it could be, Jeff, but I don't believe that that was the case in this matter. They had a number of witnesses that would have been available to testify that it was crack, but they chose not to. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Padilla. Mr. Padilla, you took this case as an appointment by the court. Thank you very much for your help and your vigorous representation of your client.